Today's episode of Wine Time Fridays is brought to you in part by our friends at Coeur d'Alene Fresh and Elsom Cellars. Good times and great wines are meant to be shared. Since 2006, Elsom Cellars has been producing 100% local Washington wine from Washington's top vineyards. Visit elsomcellars.com for more information or simply call 425-298-3082. Located in downtown Coeur d'Alene, Fresh Wine Bar is a place to meet friends, relax, and just be Coeur d'Alene. Consider Fresh Wine Bar for your next event, located across the street from the new city parking lot at 4th and Coeur d'Alene Avenue, or visit freshwinebar.com.
Just like a little dirtier. Am I?
Yeah, no, that's right.
It picks up the terroir instead of the fruit, kind of.
That's right. So. Yes. It's kind of a medium bodied, tastes a little black cherry in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, like you said, on the back, you've got tasting notes. I think I might need glasses that have a higher magnification because mine suck these days.
And it says hints of tomato leaf and even a little vanilla on the nose.
Tomato leaf.
I really got to put you to work to taste those.
Yeah, it's almost like tasting rocks and...
And sheep butt.
That's funny because that's what they even have it in some of, they said the graphite. And so we were like, what? It's like, because of the minerality is, they said it's kind of through the graphite.
Mm. Yeah, you got to start tasting some pencil lead, right?
Right? Number two, Pinot.
It's been a long week, right? Are you ready to wind down? Why not? It's time for the Wine Time Fridays podcast with Shelley and Phil. Neither are sommeliers, but both have a deep passion for life, each other, and of course, delicious wine. And now, here to talk about this week over a glass of wine is Shelley and Phil. It's wine time.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Wine Time Fridays with Shelley and Phil. Episode, Shelley, check this out. Episode 171. You see what I did there?
I did.
Episode 171. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
It's wine time.
It's our little bell.
Yes. Today, July 28th, the last Friday in July, and we have another guest, which is fantastic. We have with us from Seven Cellars in California, we have Jeff Spurbeck. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Phil, Shelley. I'm glad to be here.
So I always need to figure out an opening general question so that we can have wine in our glass while we talk. So right now, I'm going to open the first of our, are we doing five or are we doing four? We never really just decided.
Whatever. How many do you have?
We've got five here.
Well, then go ahead and open them up.
Here we go. Okay, so right now we are opening up the 2020 The Farm Collection Chardonnay from Seven Cellars. And Jeff is going to explain to us after we toast this.
That's a lot.
I'm sorry, we have another glass. How this all came to be. So, two, health, wealth and abundance, gratitude, romance, and
peace on earth.
And toasted
toast. Cheers.
Cheers.
Jeff, you're going to have to prove to us you have a glass of Chardonnay in front of you.
Uh-oh. I'm going to have to get the glass. That's what I asked right before we started. I didn't get the glass. I didn't know if you want to be drinking as well.
Oh, heck yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the story of how you came involved with Seven Cellars. And I want to talk about the farm collection, how that came to be as well. It's a huge question. I'm going to start having a taste of this while you talk.
Okay, wonderful. Well, gosh, how far do I go back? So the wine, I guess the wine dates back to having represented John Elway during his playing day. So we have been friends for... gosh, nearly 35 years.
Were you his agent in 1983 when he start when he got drafted?
No, John's older than I am. I was still in college.
Fair enough.
And so there are different types of agents. So I was on for John and another close friend, Ronnie Lott. I was their marketing agent. So I did everything off the field. So they had, when I got into it, they had already had their careers going and they already had their contracts negotiated and they had agents. So I got into it being originally being a marketing agent. And so that kind of entailed finding opportunities for them, be it radio shows, shoe contracts, the endorsements, appearances, autographs, everything that you saw that they do off the field. So that's the part I managed. And it turns out that a lot of in those relationships, there's a lot more connectivity because the agent might just do three contracts or four contracts that take 3 weeks, a month or whatever it is to right. negotiate. And then that's it. There's
the, the payoff is decent at whatever, yeah. 8 to 10% or whatever it is. So
3%. Yeah, max 3%, but those are negotiated even downward. But in the marketing side, you have a lot more cause to interact. And so I had a lot of time with, well, the John and Ronnie and Jim Plunkett and others and became good friends. And so over time, I think that's kind of where the trust develops through sure. all these deals. And so near, as I was kind of wanting to wind down my representation career or a chapter of my life, I wanted to try something different. And I lived in, at the time, in Alamo, California, which is about 30, 40 minutes from Napa in the Bay Area. And so John and I were talking one day and we talked about he had his restaurants that were very successful at that time, probably almost 8 years in or so at the time. And said, let's talk about, kind of a brand extension, or the kids are getting older. His oldest couple, the girls were drinking around the kitchen table. And, yeah. And so all of a sudden it was like, he realized that was a part of their life. And so he was starting to kind of enjoy it more and really liked, he got into it with the pairings as he would do the food tastings and whatnot at the steakhouse. And so that began the journey into researching. And he said, let's, go talk to some people and let's see if we can figure this out. And, whatever it is, let's just make sure it's high quality because there's only a couple of things he puts his name on.
Right.
That he actually owns, that he's his money and his name are on them. And sure. and this, the car dealerships and the steakhouses are it. So whereas some people, they have a product for everything. John wasn't like that. He was very meticulous and about what it was that he did. So, so I did. So I began the research, and it led me to after several people wanted to make his wine, we realized there was kind of more to it, and the distribution and the legal aspect, and there are so many facets that I was learning through a fire hose. And I came across One Hope. And One Hope was introduced to me actually by Ronnie Lott. He said, you should go talk to him. And because they were raising money to invest in this new property that they were doing there in Napa. And so I learned about them. I met Jake Cloverdance, their CEO, and just really developed a fast friendship with him. We ended up investing in One Hope, and both John and I did. And then at the same time, I had a conversation with Jake around saying, we've been talking about doing a wine and doing our own wine and with John's name. And he said, yeah, I'd be interested. And I think he was thinking because he had made a couple of wines for Chris Paul and Kershaw and some others on a kind of a one-off celebrity basis for their charities.
Right.
And so they had done that. And I said, no, we actually want to make it a company. We really want to make it a sustainable project. And he's like, oh, okay. So we ended up they invested in us. They allowed us to create the label. So I kind of partnered with found a designer and ended up creating the Reserve, which you guys will have in a minute. But yep. That was our first one. That was for kind of the steakhouses and online.
Is that 2012 or 2014 was the
original? 2013 was the first vintage. Yeah.
I got the average there.
You were right. 2012 and 14.
And so, real quick, what I think a lot of people may or may not know about One Hope is all of their wines that they sell, each particular one, unless I'm wrong, goes to a specific organization,
charity
that is designed from that. Like this one would go to this charity, and then this wine would go to this charity. Is that kind of how that works?
So that was the original premise. And then they had so many varietals, and then some weren't getting enough funding, and because some sold better than others.
Sure.
So they changed their model to pick kind of four pillars of charities that they thought represented a little bit of, you know, each group or philanthropy that they wanted to contribute to. We picked in the beginning Team Rubicon because John had a particular affinity to and for the military.
Right.
John has always kind of referred to those guys as his heroes, that those people are truly the ones who sacrifice. He really blushes at the concept of being called a hero. He's gone to Afghanistan. He went over years ago with Robin Williams and they did the USO tour.
Right.
And very humbled by the experience. And so it was an easy selection for us to contribute to sure. Team Rubicon. So
was Jack in the John's dad, was he in the military?
He was not.
He probably feels like he was as many games as he coached, but yeah.
Yeah, so you know that
it is a form of war. But not to make a joke out of it, but you know, those of us who have played football, it is a form of war, but it's not life or death. And we have to make that distinction.
That's right.
Complete difference. And that's why I'm really admire John's kind of idea of not wanting to be called a hero, even though to many in the Denver and, you know, the Bay Area, he has been a hero for many. He's been a thorn in a lot of our sides. As Pac-12,
depends on what side you're on.
You know, it depends on what side you're on. Yeah. And Seahawks and Denver in the same division for many years. And there may even be a Brian Bosworth question coming up at some point today.
Oh, wow.
I think John, for sure was there when this whole idea of Bosworth came around, the Boz. But so, yeah, he's got this kind of resonates with the military and those true heroes.
Yep. Yep. So that he does kind of put his money where his mouth is, that to support them is the, you know, kind of the least he can do. You know, just on a side note, we just saw Jim McMahon. Jim McMahon has been a very big supporter as well of military and personnel. He's invited them to golf tournaments. He brings them along where he goes and travels and stuff. He's very good that way.
Yeah. Jim McMahon was a bit of a character himself.
Yep. He still is. He hasn't changed.
I'll bet.
He's slowed down a little bit.
My son is in the military, so I appreciate that.
Oh, that's wonderful. What branch?
He's in the Marines.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good for him.
Well, do I have to go hua?
Hua.
Exactly. So, yeah. So that's it's a big part of the story. And we know in different parts of the world that people are going to hate John Elway. And that's okay. Even if they buy a bottle, they can break it. And they can buy another one out of frustration. Oh, they keep buying them. We don't care.
And they can use it for target practice.
whatever makes your boat float. I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah.
I was selling in Oakland one day, right after the kind of pandemic. And so it was quiet. And I was going to a store. So I go and I will drag a bag upon occasion to go and introduce our product. And so we were sitting there and, I was trying to tell a story. The guy didn't have any time. He goes, I can't deal with this right now. And he goes, I said, well, do you mind if I just tell you, you know, briefly who we are? So next time I come by, you'll know. And he goes, oh yeah, that's fine. I said, well, so this is, it's a wine by John Elway, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, whoa, you know where you are? I said, yeah, I'm in Oaktown. And I didn't live far from there. And he's like, yeah, you're in Oaktown. He goes, this is Raider country. And I said, yeah. And he starts talking, and I have one of the reps with me from RNDC. And I said, look, he's talking to him. And I get on the phone and I said, here's someone else that drinks it. And so I called Jim Plunkett, one of the great Raiders of all time.
Of course.
Two Super Bowls.
He didn't have to move out of anywhere where his career.
And so the correlation is nice because I send Jim wine, and he's a Stanford guy, right? So the Stanford. Yeah. So I said, Jim, I said, this guy here doesn't want to buy the wine. He says it's Raider country. And I said, I'm telling him, well, even a Raider drinks it. He texts the phone. The guy looks at the name on the phone. And he almost wet himself, but he couldn't believe it. He ends up buying a couple of cases. So it's like, sure. you can even convert a Raider fan in Raider country that hates Elway.
And then Marshawn Lynch walked in and said, I'll have a bottle too.
There you go. And with some Skittles.
With some Skittles, that's right.
The Chardonnay pairs well with Skittles.
Yep, does. I was just thinking that.
Right?
Especially the purple ones. The purple ones. My very favorite. That's fantastic. We're going to move on to number two. Jeff, you finally get to pour yourself a glass. Shelly, you can put your glass right there. And I'm going to pour this into this new one for you. So we don't even have to do a rinse pour for you, but I will for me.
You pour so much.
Yeah, well, could be tonight's wine. Okay.
So I'm going to have to go get the wine opener now. So I don't have that.
Nope. So while Jeff's getting the wine opener, we just opened a 2021 Elway's Reserve Chardonnay. And so we will find out what makes the difference between this reserve and the Farm Collection Chardonnay. By the way, the Farm Collection Chardonnay, about $30 at the winery. This runs around $60. But I know for a fact there are plenty of retailers here in the greater Coeur d'Alene area that are carrying both the Elway Reserve and the Seven Cellars wines.
Yes.
And we did not mention that the first Chardonnay is 100% Chardonnay, Arroyo Seco, 13.4% alcohol.
13.4 on and this.
Has a little bit of oak on the first one.
You can't. This one. Can you tell me what the alcohol is on this one, Smarty Pants?
It's more. 14.5?
It is 13.8.
Wow.
Much more. Not that much more.
So if you look, I think on the back of each of them, it has actually the tasting notes on there. So it has, if you see, it has a lemon and pineapple, sweet cream and vanilla. So it can make everybody sound like an expert.
That's pretty good. It not only helps them sound like an expert, but it lets them know what they should be looking for.
What they should be looking
they
for.
They can recognize that in other wines too.
Yep,
absolutely.
And I love when they do that.
And when it and kind of what it pairs with, depending on what dish you're making too, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, #cheersing.
Cheersing. Cheers.
And now he's got the glass.
Cheers.
Now we can do a proper toast.
So let me. I just want to, going back to the farm for a second. So, because you haven't asked, but I'll share anyway. So the farm, its name came from the nickname of Stanford.
Yeah. And by the way, that is a heck of an icon, a heck of a logo. Shelly, did you notice that? You can't see it there. There you go, right there. It is very cool. It's got a... kind of like a, not a rake, but a pitchfork.
Pitchfork and a goalpost.
Yeah. And it's, I you know what? I am a sucker for
good logo,
good icon, great taglines, short and sweet and to the point. By the way, the tagline for Seven Cellars is excellence in every sip, which I feel like I helped come up with that because when I was writing the copy for the sponsorship and I sent it to Nick to get approval, and I said, I'd love to use this as a tagline. He said, we just started using that. So I'm taking full effort.
We'll start sending you the royalty payment for it.
Perfect. I would like 10 times that royalty that I'm currently getting.
And so, and also on the.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So
if it's laying down, it's easy to identify. But a lot of them.
It really is.
You know?
Yeah. And that, and by the way, I already pulled the foil off this, but I haven't on the reserve. It's the same. The reserve. So
on the reserve, you see, we went with the more, you know, kind of iconic. We started off in Denver. Sure. We went with a little more with the orange hint. In the beginning, we did put John's name on the front. It was the reserve. It was Napa. It's our first effort to do it to kind of gain some notoriety and let people know we were in the wine business. And that again, it's our reserve is in the steakhouses, but it's all over now. People are, they're buying it all over the country. It's not just, in Denver anymore. And everyone thought, even early restaurateurs in Denver. Well, why would we carry that? That's an Elway's restaurant. That's a competitor. And we said, okay, so we got into STK, we got into Shanahan's, we got into others. And all of a sudden they go, okay. And people start asking for it. So they said, they couldn't help it. Then they had to buy it, which was great.
That is when you know you've done your marketing correctly. And it's really fun as digital marketers, as Shelley and I are, to speak with someone that's been marketing at a very a lot larger scale for many years, and managing and marketing for individuals and individual brands.
Yeah.
Once you have people asking for your brand, that's that tipping point. Now all of a sudden your leverage starts to change just a little bit, you know?
We don't have that.
Yeah, well, we had it a year ago and
you had your chance.
You had your chance. By the way, that brings up a really good segue. Because I do want to know, in your opinion, how things have changed in the sports agent world. I've got written down Saquon Barkley because he has he said no to a pretty big number in the fall and this March. And now he has got the franchise tag put on him for a number that's even lower than those other two. As a running back, this is the big controversy right now. Running backs aren't getting what they're worth. And I'm like, Jeff, do you want to comment on what that word worth? Because I think we all have a different definition of our worth, right?
I mean, I think there's it's a synonym between worth and value, right? And that value is worth only what someone's willing to pay, right?
Exactly.
And if there's not a market that says there's 20 other teams willing to pay that, then he's not worth that, not to say he's not valuable. That's different.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? No, I get it 100%.
Your most treasured item in your home or your most favorite wine may not be valuable to somebody else.
Right, exactly.
That is the epitome of what you're trying to describe right now is, Shelly might have a Beanie Baby that she paid $349 for, but that has incredible, that has incredible value to her.
There's
but
a Beanie Baby movie coming out.
Oh, no.
Right after the Barbie movie?
Yeah, right after.
Yeah, we're not even going to tell you, Jeff. Well, I guess we're going to. We've got a pink.
We made some Barbie cocktail recipes for social media.
Yeah, because that's right. What we do. Yeah, you got to roll.
Keep innovating. Got to keep marketing.
You do. Absolutely.
But to get back to Saquon.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. The running back market has been like this for a long time. They don't get drafted as high.
Yep.
And they haven't for years because I think people think they're interchangeable. But at that same time, when you get someone and their shelf life, so to speak, or their, how long they last is another
3 to 5 years or something.
It's in question, right? So it's hard to give them a long-term contract. But at the same time, when you find, some of them out there that are so special and unique and offer, represent a significant portion of your offense, you have to strongly consider changing the model.
Like Reggie, Reggie Bush.
Oh, Reggie Bush. Sorry. Reggie.
But did you not, was Reggie White, you were his agent at one point?
No.
Reggie White? No. Okay. I've got someone else down here that I can't find right now. So there you go. Okay.
LaMichael James, maybe one of your ducks from up Northwest or?
It's not my ducks.
That's right. Are you a Wazoo guy?
Oh, no. Bow down to Washington.
UW.
I made sure when we did the Apple Cup episode that I showed that to Drew.
And Damon, I'm sure, appreciated it.
Oh, Damon, big time. Yeah, it's pretty funny because I worked in the fight songs for both those schools. And then I threw Shelley a bone with the USC fight song, which made all of us want to puke. But Every time I exactly, I just threw up a little bit in my mouth again. But so I played the Husky Fight song, and we were on Zoom, and Drew was like, but he was gone. He shut his camera, and then he did the same thing for the Trojan Fight song, and he's like shaking his head. Oh, Shelley, it was going so good.
Right up until then.
But it's funny, you know. You mentioned people hate John Elway. Now, they don't like it because he played on the opposing team. And I think most legitimate, grounded, logical fans know that's a strong word to be used in context of the game, but you don't hate the individual. And so what I appreciated about doing that, it is fanaticism.
That's exactly right, Shelley.
The Apple Cup episode, there was trash talking all over the place. It was great. It started at about the 1 or 2 minute mark where Damon said to Drew, look, you know, you guys, your kids at Wazoo are going to come work for me and my winery. You know, I think that's really fun, and it's all in fun, and that's how it should be.
That's right. Well, so, and to your point, even I remember John's second to last game, the Super Bowl, they played the Packers, and he was at the end of his career, and people, like, they did, ESPN did a poll, like, who would you like to see win the Super Bowl? It was 92% John Elway.
Because he hadn't won yet, right?
Well, yeah. So to your point is that there was a respect there. Even the other teams, the Kansas City, I mean, I hear more people come up to him, having been around him for so long, they come up and it's like, you know, John, you ruined my childhood. And they go, but I really had to respect you. And, you know, I loved watching you play. But, you know, so, you know, and those are people from Kansas City and Oakland and Cleveland. A lot of Cleveland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They couldn't. Yeah. The drive will always be there.
The following year. And yeah.
Shelley and I had the opportunity to help deliver John's boat up here in Coeur d'Alene with the boat manufacturer. We went. While they delivered his boat, we were right next to him because they needed to ride back.
Standcraft, so. A junior.
Yep.
It was at the Wooden Boat Show.
Hey, you know, it just blew
several years ago.
He just blew another engine on that thing.
Blew another engine?
He just got it back. We were up there at the end of last year for his son Jack's bachelor party. And at the end of the trip, we're driving, one of the engines blew. So he got a new one set and everything, had it all ready to go this year when he got there. And it blew again. So he's
engine number three. Wow. Engine number three.
Yeah.
I mean, this is only like 8 years ago. Yeah. Maybe 10 years ago, something like that.
He likes driving it fast.
Yeah.
We hear that.
There's a room. How often do you make it up here to Coeur d'Alene?
Usually once a year at least. Yeah, I haven't got up this year yet, but the summer's not over, as I say. And he's got a little longer season this year because he's not back into football right now. So,
So where are his steakhouses? Because I've never been.
He's got six or seven in the Denver area. Is that right?
Four, all throughout Colorado. Okay. So there's the easiest one would be at Terminal B at the airport at DIA. Mm-hmm. And I think that for a long time, that was like the number one producing or grossing restaurant in all of Colorado.
Wow.
And then he has one Cherry Creek. And then that's kind of the flagship. That was the original one. Right. And then he has one in Vail, and he has one at the Ritz in downtown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So none in California.
Nope. Actually, he's having two more put in the airport. He's kind of coming up here, I think, in 24.
Same airport or?
Different terminals. So terminal A and C.
Yeah, you go to the low-hanging fruit, right?
Hey, you go as what works. It's good for us to get more wine distribution, too.
Yeah, no kidding. Any chance of expanding to different states?
It hasn't been really discussed. His partner in it is there, too, and he's kind of Tim Schmidt. He's done a great job with them, and he had the Haciendas. They were Mexican places for a long time. So, he sold out, and I think they're good with where they are, I think, the ones they have.
You know, there's a time to say we're happy right here. And everyone seems to like to go bigger is better, and bigger comes with bigger problems and challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they say. More money, more problems.
Yeah. So on to the next one.
No, we're taking a break. We're going to go take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go red.
Wine gathers its taste from everything it encounters. The earth, the air, everything leaves a mark, and so do people. If we are sipping great wine with strangers, before long we find out just how much we all have in common. Quality grapes and great wines are meant to be shared, and so are good times with new friends. At Elsom Cellars, we have been producing 100% local Washington wine from Washington's top vineyards since 2006. Owner Jody Elsom is a pioneer in the Seattle urban winery movement and has been producing brilliant Washington wines in the city while exploring the complexities found only in vineyards east of the Cascades. Not only do we have the wine and our popular Corks on the Loose wine club, we also have the venue, a quick 5-minute drive south of downtown Seattle or a simple 10-minute walk from the Soto Link Light Rail Station. And we think we throw a pretty good party, too. Check out our upcoming events by visiting elsomcellars.com. Follow us on social for the latest on everything happening at the winery, or simply call 425-298-3082.
Welcome back to Wine Time Fridays with Shelley and Phil and Jeff Spurbeck, the co-founder and CEO of Seven Cellars. Speaking of darker, we're going to go red with this 2020 The Farm Collection Pinot Noir.
All right.
I poured light this time.
Sure.
Hashtag Shelly.
Cheersing.
Cheersing.
Cheersing. So this is a cheers. This is the Monterey Pinot, 94% Pinot and 6% Petit Syrah.
And it's really
an American oak for 9 months. We wanted to give it a little bit, little extra body to it, a little deeper color. And some of the Pinots just we think are a little flimsy and a little too soft and want to give a little bit more texture and body to it.
Can I just say the Pinots that are coming out of California in the last year or two seem to have a little bigger body, which I love. Not that I don't like the lighter fruit driven Willamette Valley, Pinots, but I'm loving this little. It's just like a little dirtier.
Yeah, no, that's right.
It picks up the terroir instead of the fruit, kind of.
That's right. That's right. So yes. It's kind of a medium bodied, tastes a little black cherry in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, like you said, on the back, you've got tasting notes. I think I might need glasses that have a higher magnification because mine suck these days.
And it says hints of tomato leaf and even a little vanilla on the nose.
Tomato leaves.
Hmm. I got to put you to work to taste those.
Yeah, it's almost like tasting rocks and
and sheep butt.
That's what they even have it in. And some of they said the graphite. And so we were like, what? It's like because of the minerality is they said it's kind of through the graphite.
Mm. Yeah, you got to start tasting some pencil lead, right?
Right. It's a number two Pinot.
Number two Pinot. There you go.
That's cute.
Jeff is bringing a sense of humor to the table. I like that. After only one glass, too. Good job, Jeff.
All right. Good. Mm. So you said the alcohol 14.8%, right?
I got a double.
I think this is maybe from 2020 that I'm reading.
14.5 on, yeah.
We're big fans of, a little lower alcohol. The Washington wines are just, they're so hot because I guess the sugars and stuff, but it's, you're getting some 14.8s and 15. Yeah. I mean, that's just hot.
Yeah, that's getting up there. You're tasting the alcohol a little bit more.
Yep, mm-hmm. You sure are. Yeah.
Tell us about your winemaker.
Oh, has anybody heard of your winemaker?
I think so. The name's familiar. It's kind of like Elway, but it's.
I think I'm friends with him on Facebook. I give him a birthday video every year.
Well, that's nice of you. Does he reciprocate?
He doesn't reciprocate with a video, but he does answer my question that I ask of everyone in the wine industry. P.S. What is in your celebratory wine glass tonight? And for whatever reason, he seems to be hung up on you know, Opus One and and Mondavi, this Mondavi wine and things like that. So yeah, go figure.
Yep. So Rob Mondavi Jr. Is the one that helped launch our reserve collection. And he was, you know, when we were kind of coming together for all this, I wanted to, you know, again, being from the marketing side, besides just a great quality wine, I really wanted to have something to offer people that made it simpler for them to say, wait, what does John Elway know about wine? Well, he may not know as much as Rob Mondavi Jr. So that's how we and why we ended up reaching collaboration with him.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. I mean, we've spent some time with him, and he's very humble in his approach to all this. He was likely breastfed on wine, and I came to it a little bit later than that. And so he's asking me, you know, after he makes the wine, what do you think? What do you think of the wine?
And you're like, I love it. Let's sell it.
I'm like, Rob, what can I tell you about this that you don't know? It's like, I'm going to embarrass myself by giving you trying to fake any terminology about what it is that why I enjoy it. But he goes, I don't care. He goes, I just want to know, you know, it, yes or no. And why is it just taste, you know, how does it taste to you? And so we just, they hit it off, John and Rob, it's a good relationship. So we're very grateful to have him as part of the team.
I do love the down to earth aspect. And we had one of the assistants from the Robert Mondavi brand and Mr. Mondavi himself, shout out to Laureen Betts. Boy, it's the longest episode of Wine Time Fridays. Almost 12 hours.
Lots of Mondavi
she had stories. A ton of Mondavi stories. But you know what? He had his challenges with the finances and the ups and downs, but he was always, his heart was to push forward the wine industry in the California, area. And he did that. He taught how, yes, you mentioned before, we're all competitors, but you know, at the end of the day, we all want to be successful. And so you can be competitors and collaborate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and he really taught that. So,
well, I mean, yeah, you're talking about Rob's grandfather, but when he did, what he did for Napa Valley is amazing. You know, and they think everybody, you talk about having a royalties, everybody should be paying him a little bit of their sales of their wine almost.
Yeah.
That entire valley for, you know, going to France and being the visionary and challenging them and saying, no, we make everybody as good a wine as you guys do here in France and proving it.
Yeah.
So that was marketing genius. He was ahead of his time in that regard.
Yeah. And it could have, you know, he could have fallen flat on his face on that, but because of his passion and his heart in it and his perseverance, he just believed in it. And that belief led us to this glass of wine right here. Really.
That's so right.
So you guys started with your reserve collection first, and then you brought the farm collection. Right.
We did. In fact, we knew that, you know, the price point and by the glass, it was going to be more difficult to kind of share it. We could get it in by the bottle and by restaurants, you know, for the reserve pricing and, you know, to get a Napa cab, you know, gosh, under $40 is difficult now with the price of fruit and everything. And so we said, well, we want to have something that's more approachable. You know, the economy, you know, vision was that the economy was going to change. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. And I said, we have to find it, you know, having a more approachable wine that people can buy the glass and we can have it more in that sweet spot. So my president, Dan Foster, we sat down. He has a very good palate. He's been in this. He was in the restaurant industry. And so we talked about it and he said, you know, here's the price point. Here's what I believe, you know, what we should be making. We got into the, you know, the Paso and the Central Coast fruit, and we ended up, you know, kind of coming up with comparables and really doing the research. And we came out with it right in April of 2020.
Wow. 2020.
Was that, wait, when did the COVID hit? 2020?
2020, March 2020 is when it hit us.
So we were set to launch April 1st of 2020.
Wow.
With the 19 vintage then?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so we were all gung-ho, ready to go, and the world shuts down.
Yeah, you know, when you mentioned, it seems like the economy is going to change. I'm like, you know, that's such an understatement to what actually happened.
Right? Yeah. So if we just had reserve and just tried to do it in restaurants, that's where we're primarily, we would have been done. And so we had developed, all these cases bottled and ready to go and no one to sell it to. So we shifted from this strategy because, you know, all the on-premise and all the restaurants were shut now. And so we had to go but off-premise was just buying what they knew was selling because everyone was now shifting to grocery stores and off-premise and liquor stores, et cetera. And so no one was really taking any, and we just kept grinding, working, talking to them. And eventually it broke that they were, I think some of the big suppliers had run out. They'd sold so much. And so I think we were kind of next in line, which was fortuitous for us. And we ended up selling out all of it. And we ended up having to then rebottle quickly. And the next, you know, vintage was coming right behind it. And so it was wildly successful and, you know, kind of knock on wood, better to be lucky than good. But we worked hard through it and, you know, it turned out that people liked it and appreciated what, you know, kind of the offering, the price point and the value.
You know, I know people will say it's better to be lucky than good, but you really make your own luck. It sometimes looks super lucky and too easy, but there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears under that luck and belief again, and not, you know, giving up. So
yeah,
this is a very good Pinot.
It is
94% Pinot Noir, 6% Petite Syrah. 6%. Go figure.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Not a typical blending grape with Pinot.
No, it's not. But we found it. It's one of the favorites. People love it. It's scored well. And so, yeah, we're proud of it.
I get a little smoke in this.
Do you?
Yeah. Was it a fire here?
No, not in the Central Coast, thank goodness, in Monterey.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know why.
I'm going to make Shelly super happy. We're going to stay on time. We're going to take this Pinot.
She's the timekeeper in this?
Yes, because he'll run off and blah, we'll be here for 2 hours. So.
Blah,
right?
Blah.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
I am pouring right now the 2020, the Farm Collection. Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yep. That you got you have the 20?
The 20, yeah. We only found the 21 on the website.
Yep. So,
but we have the 20 on everything except for that reserve Chardonnay is the 21.
Got it.
So,
This is from Paso Robles.
Yes, it is. Mm. 95% Cab and then 5% Petite Syrah. And it's Asian American and French oak for 14 months.
American and French?
Oh. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Jeff, how have you had to up your wine making knowledge? Because this, do you have the notes right in front of you or is it coming off the top of your head?
Both.
Okay.
It's off the top of my head. I have a cheat sheet just in case, but it's...
Yeah. Because you say it enough, right?
Yep.
And that's one of the great things about wine. And when you're in the industry, you start learning. What we've tried to do with this podcast is to educate. So, for instance, on this Cabernet Sauvignon, well, I actually would say the Pinot Noir, had silky tannins. Shelley, that's the Social Web wine word of the week, silky tannins.
Silky tannins. Those are good tannins.
They are, yeah, they're more soft. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have robust tannins, but we have silky tannins on this. It refers to the texture of the tannins in a wine, which are, you know, the compounds that give the wine its structure and mouthfeel, but the silky tannins are smooth and gentle. I got that on the Pinot. I haven't tasted this one yet. I'm assuming it's going to have silky tannins too.
Since it's your word of the week, it might as well.
I know. Hashtag cheersing. It might as well. Am I getting licorice? Am I getting anise at all?
A little bit of licorice.
There is, I think, a little bit. Yep.
A little black licorice on this.
Also, a lot of dark fruit.
Chocolate. I think a little chocolate and dark fruit in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's something even, God, what is it? It's something like, it's not fig, but it's something.
So it's not pepper, but they call it black spices, I think, maybe. In there.
Maybe that's what it is. Because I know it's not necessarily a black pepper, but this is very easy to drink. I know you guys already talked about this. Is this 100% Cabernet Sauvignon?
No, 95 and 5% Petit Sirah.
Petit Sirah also. Quick question. Does Seven Cellars make a Merlot?
No.
Okay. The only reason I asked this is that we had a one of our bottle shops around here said we keep the Seven Cellars Merlot. And I'm like, I don't think they make a Merlot. But I didn't want to say anything to them. And so
you're going to have to educate them, though.
Well, you know, education, you can do it like a sledgehammer to the face. So just gently
sure.
Push that in.
Yeah, no, I get it. No, we are. We're going to have another release. It's an iconic tier at the probably be ready in November. I think we're bottling in August. Actually, yeah, early November. And it's going to be limited production. It's going to be quite expensive. It's going to be our highest tier. So it'll be closer to probably $200 a bottle.
Is this a red blend or pretty specific?
It's going to be a cab, a big Napa cab.
Funny, Nick didn't send me that bottle.
It's not a bottle.
You can't.
You know, there's just sometimes you need to make exceptions. We're going to have to make a trip down
That's right.
Rutherford.
And when you do, you let us know and we will gladly host you.
Perfect. So
it's still in barrel right now. We'll give you a barrel sample.
You would love that. He's never.
That's on my bucket list. I have never had a barrel tasting. And now it's almost to the point where it's like, I'm going to hold out, but I don't want to. I really want to be barrel tasting.
Yeah. Well, hold out for what?
I know. I'm fascinated by that though. You actually take the, what is it? The, it's the, what do they call that? The thief, right?
Thief.
The thieves, and you put it in a glass. I just find that fascinating.
It's like a base.
So, I just looked this up the other day. So a thief is specifically, I think, to bourbon, whereas the syringe is actually in wine.
Interesting.
So the thief is the metal, and it's copper or metal. You know, they pull back. Okay. It's a really beautiful thing. Some use it, but more use the old bulb and old school syringes.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Like a baster, yeah.
Like a baster, yeah.
Exactly.
Or a lot of times you don't even have to have the little squeezy thing on the end. You just cap it with your thumb.
Yeah.
Which is the best way to do it. Stick it in, cap it, boom, right in.
Crazy. But the really intriguing part about that is, gosh, that's difficult to know exactly, to project forward another 2 months, of another 6 months. Oh. It's like, my gosh, what an art that is.
Well, and you're exactly right. Like, so does Rob go out into the vineyards and pick the grapes and, you know, and squeeze those grapes and because those, I mean, that's
where it starts.
That's in an art in its of itself as well, because you're like, nope, it needs another 2 days. What? How do you know that? But just knowing the weather and the terroir and the winds and the this and that, and they've done it long enough to where they have that educated guess.
So I'm going to hope I don't butcher this. I think this is a gentleman's name. His name is Oscar Renteria. I'm almost positive, but because it reminds me, there's also a designer of similar name, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I think that's his name. And he is the horticulturist, the grower out there. Yeah. And he's an amazing, and his family's been in it a long time. But I went out there and had the privilege one time. We went and spent part of a day with them and cutting vines and looking at vines and talking about the dirt and the vines. It was like that part. Both my grandparents were farmers and ranchers in Northern California growing up. And so we grew up around what we called almonds and olives and rice and other things. So getting that. So the farming part is as interesting to me as any of the rest of it.
I gotta say,
right.
I think
the farming part is really fascinating.
I think the farming part I would be more interested in, I mean, vastly interested in the actual making of the wine as well.
Yeah.
But I love to get my hands dirty. I love to know canopy management. Why are you cutting back the canopy today and not last week? You know, what were those indicators?
Right. You know? Were they measuring it with, I mean, old school by tongue and or new school exactly. by science and taking it out and dissecting the grape to figure out what the residual sugars at that moment are? And
I know it's really fascinating.
It really is.
This Cabernet Sauvignon is very drinkable today, right now. Don't lay this puppy down. No. Open it, pop it, drink it.
They are made to be, as they said, they go, there's very few wines that are meant to be laid down or laid down for a very long time.
Yeah, that's right.
No,
right.
Yep, yeah. And these prices, this price point, this wine is, you know, there's a term that one, the porch pounder, but a daily drinker, right? That you can enjoy it and not feel guilty that you opened a $80 bottle of wine.
Yep.
Right. But, you know, for the price point, it's very approachable and it's, you know, we hope it over delivers for the value for the money you spend on it.
Boy, that's a great target. Speaking of great targets, we're going to take one last break because I am on target to try to get him out of here in an hour and 15 minutes and not 45. We'll be right back.
Looking for a place in Coeur d'Alene with a casual vibe that you can meet with friends, relax, and just be Coeur d'Alene? Fresh Wine Bar is your place to go to meet friends and relax. Owned and operated by a longtime Coeur d'Alene family, Fresh Wine Bar is more than just a run-of-the-mill bottle shop. It's a place where you can call home in an authentic small-town environment that will have you coming back home to Fresh. If you're looking for a wine club that over-delivers, this is the Fresh place for you. Introducing Club Fresh Wine Club. The Club Fresh Wine Club is one of the most exciting and flexible wine clubs in the Pacific Northwest, and it has its perks. Come check out the exclusive speakeasy in the back for all Fresh Wine Club members. It's your personal tasting room. And for our beer-loving friends, Fresh Craft Beer Bar offers 8 rotating local taps. Stop by for a welcoming, fun time every Wednesday around 5:30 for Wino Wednesday. Consider Fresh Wine Bar for your next event located across the street from the new city parking lot at 4th and Coeur d'Alene Avenue or visit freshwinebar.com.
Welcome back to Wine Time Fridays. Shelly is being a poop sometimes by not bringing us back in. I'll take all that out. And it's episode 171.
It'll be on the egg break or whatever you call it.
It's called the Easter egg.
Easter egg.
The last Friday of July, we are here with co-founder and CEO Jeff Spurbeck of Seven Cellars. As we are opening up the last wine, in fact, I haven't even taken the foil off yet, but Seven Cellars, we talked a little bit about One Hope. We've talked a little bit about the Team Rubicon, but Seven Cellars is involved in a lot of different organizations and charities. I mean, I've got like Children's Diabetes Foundation, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, Project Cure, Project Angel Heart, the UC Health, which is University of Colorado.
Is it? It's not yes. University of Colorado.
California? No.
I was like, what UC is it?
It's UC, University of California, Colorado.
I think which is interesting because I think they call them CUs, most like CU Boulder.
It is CU. Yeah, it is Colorado University. Yeah, you're right. Gosh, what are Buffaloes? Thank you. Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
Losing all my everything. And then the last one I have is National Kidney Foundation, Shelly. Shelly's very educated about kidneys.
Yep. Oh. I was a dialysis nurse. And the transplant coordinator for a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So you've spent your time around some kidneys.
Exactly.
She educates doctors around here about kidneys.
We've also given to local food banks as well. It's a big mission as part of, you know, our wine and our project is to kind of give back. And this a big reason why we partnered with One Hope in the beginning. They already had the kind of the philanthropic model built into their equation. And we wanted to follow suit. And so We started our primary beneficiary is Team Rubicon. So that's from every case. But we donate incrementally to those other causes you mentioned as well. And so that we have people that and partners that if we do something with a, you know, charitable dinner or whatever it is, and then we help out with those various causes.
Hashtag cheersing on this final Elway's Reserve. And I'm going to make an announcement. Shelley doesn't even know what's coming.
Oh, no.
You have to taste it. Once you toast, you have to taste.
That's in the rules, I'm pretty sure.
It is in the rules. Yeah. It's not even in the fine print.
Yeah.
We have been talking, Shelley and I, about featuring a non-profit or not-for-profit charity, you know, probably more around the Coeur d'Alene area, but her daughter, you know, has got a great organization down in California. Featured them once a month, just one, pick one out and talk a little bit about it. And so this has inspired me to basically make the commitment of doing that once a month, because if I don't say it, it doesn't exist. So I have said it, and we are going to start in August, which is Washington Wine Month, and we will start featuring a charity or not-for-profit or nonprofit every once a month. So there you go.
Well, that's great. Good.
Yeah.
For you.
I mean, it's, you know, it's bringing awareness for one thing. And I think as a society, we need to be doing more of this stuff. I love the idea that Seven Cellars, I mean, I just read off six or seven and you're like, yeah, and there's food banks and there's this and there's that.
Food banks over the country. Yeah.
You
checks to the food banks all the time. Yeah.
Right. You certainly have your flagship charities.
Cause, yep.
That you partner with. But that doesn't mean the others go away. And so I really appreciate that. So
oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. And our dog says, thank you.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Thank her.
We need to talk about this. This is really good. This is, I held the bottle up. It's 2020 Elway's Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon. And we should probably wrap up more for Lucy to eat dinner than for Jeff's time, I guess. I don't
know. Well, that's what we're concerned.
Lucy's saying it's time, huh?
She has a clock. It's pretty spot on.
Yeah, I bet it's 5 o'clock, right? Yeah, close. Yeah, 5:06. But
this is?
Yeah, this has got a depth to it that the other does not. And it doesn't mean this is better than the other. It just means it's different. It's more complex.
And it could be laid down quite a bit.
Yep.
Is this 100% cab?
Nope. This is 97%. It's from the Oak Knoll District.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And it is 2% Petit Sirah and 1% Petit Verdot.
Ah, okay.
And so it's aged in French oak barrels with medium toast for 18 months.
Okay. Oak, 18 months.
Nope.
I wanted to bring up where the winery is located there at One Hope. Is that Estate 8?
Estate 8 is our sister winery, and it is located in the heart of Napa Valley, right in Rutherford, across on Highway 29, across from Cake Bread Cellars. So it is as prime a location as you could want.
Yeah.
So you go past Mondavi, BV, and then ours is next.
Interesting. Yeah, Cake Bread has got some very high-end Chardonnay that they love to get out there. And I also wanted to mention, Jeff, you were the recipient of a phone call from John Elway on a national show, yes?
Yes, that's true.
Who wants to be a millionaire? So I have a question for you.
I do.
I have a question. The sclera is a dense membrane located in what part of the body, Jeff?
The eyeball.
You just won someone $64,000.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And that was in the early days of the internet. When it was a little slower. So I heard the question. You have 30 seconds. John, the funny part about it is, so John knew the first answer. So, you know, John's Stanford guy.
Fancy. Yeah, I mean, you would hope.
Pretty bright guy. And so he purposely missed the first one. He didn't want to go first because he wanted to watch it and observe. So he knew it. He says, he goes, I just held off. Say, okay. Second one, he didn't phrase it wrong, or he couldn't get his buzzer to go because he goes, I knew it. He goes, I was missing. He goes, all of a sudden, you know, someone else got it. And so and then he didn't know what. So he went from knowing the first two easily and just purposely kind of waiting to missing another and then going, I don't know. And then all of a sudden now it's just him and Barkley are left.
Oh my gosh, that was against Barkley?
It was day two. Yeah. So he had to sit around for the second day of taping. He was so mad because he goes, why didn't I just get the first one right the first time? And I've been done with it. And so that's when he asked, when Regis got on there, I think I said, because John had said, I said, well, did he at least beat Charles? And he goes, he at least beat Charles. That's when he started. He goes, Charles is still here. So it was pretty funny. So, yeah, I got it right in the last seconds.
In the last seconds is right.
Before they hung up on me.
This brings up a question that I have not even on my notes. Does the name John Costakos mean anything to you?
I was going to ask you, actually. Because I'm a dub guy. I've known John.
Not only you dub guy, we graduated in the same class at West Hale High School.
No way.
Yeah, we went to junior high together, West Hale High School together. So when you kept mentioning Barkley, because John and Charles have this little thing going on. But I know John also had a poster.
Yep.
So John Elway.
Yes. From
John Costakos.
I talked to John probably 6 months ago or so.
Yeah, I think he's trying to get back in the game. You know, it's been a while, maybe about 6 months since I've had contact with him.
Yeah, he first contacted me a couple of years ago and it was talking about because of the NFT space to kind of transform some of the images and rights that they had into NFT stuff and packaging. And
yep.
So I was interested. I don't think, you know, the NFT space and post COVID and everything seems to has died with the.
Well, we can connect you with Cuvée Collective, the wine NFT club. They are partnering with all sorts of great wineries down in California. and
they're creating NFT experiences.
NFT experiences. And they are collaborating with wineries that have a vision outside the box, which you need to in the NFT space right now still. So,
yes, you do. Yeah. So one of my clients actually turned out to be a couple of them. But so Darren College was a lineman for the Packers, and he's an offensive lineman, went to Boise State, and he ended up partnering. He was a teammate of Charles Woodson's. And so he and Tony Mall also was a lineman from Nevada, Reno, or University of Nevada, and then played at the Packers, mm-hmm. and Jason Spitz. They all played lineman. They all came in the same draft class, good friends. So they all liked wine. Tony, particularly, he grew up over in not Healdsburg, but gosh, I think over there in the valley. He ended up saying, "Hey, let's make some wine." So they ended up creating Three Fat Guys, and so
three Fat Guys Wine,
Three Fat Guys Wine. And
I think this is fantastic.
They're all offensive linemen. I'd be glad to introduce you to those guys. I'm sure they'd love to do it.
But, you know, it's funny you say that, too, being the sports agent and marketer and manager that you are, talking about the linemen. These guys get no notoriety. They get paid crap. Their hands are destroyed. Their knees are destroyed. They don't come away with the brain.
Dementia.
Yeah, they're lucky. That is luck. The Gary Vaynerchuk brand under VaynerX has VaynerSports.
Yep.
And he's going after these guys that have shorter careers and helping them to get some branding deals and stuff like that. It seems very forward thinking, which is kind of Gary's MO a little bit. Mm-hmm. But as a marketing guy, a manager, a sports agent, what do you think about that? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's still hard. I mean, again, having marketed those guys too, because I did, I helped out those guys do the things that were of interest. Those guys, you know, those guys were hunters. Those guys, like, you know, they had different interests, you know, than the receivers and running backs did, and even quarterbacks. And so, well, all of them have different interests. So, but, you know, getting into the wine, they found, and it was a great fit for Tony, and he led the kind of that, spearheaded that effort. And he's still running it. You know, Darren's not as day-to-day active, nor is Jason, but they still go out and support in the, you know, the various, the launches of the brands and stuff like that as they introduce new varietals and stuff. But Tony's done a great job doing it.
Well, in a sense too, the whole name licensing now that's in college.
NIL.
Yeah. People have said that's going to be the destruction of college. I don't know if it is. I think the whole regional rivalry being blown up is going to be the destruction of that, but it's the same guys, the quarterbacks, the running backs, the receivers that are going to get those, and the centers and the defensive linemen.
They're linebackers,
not,
yeah.
They're just not. And that's just the way it is right now. We are going to wrap it up. Some wines that we had this week, we'll do that real quick. We had Kolaris Chardonnay, the Shug Brut Sparkler. We had the Prisoner Red Blend, Block 9 Pinot Noir, although I'd put this Pinot up against that any day. This is freaking awesome. By the way, this is the $30 Pinot. It's hard to find a $30 Pinot that delivers like this.
Yep.
Goose Cross, Cabernet Sauvignon, Robert Craig from Howell Mountain, Cabernet Sauvignon. We had some decent wines this last week.
We did.
So many of them, California. Go figure as we lead into this really fun episode. I think we would like to thank today's sponsors again, Coeur d'Alene Fresh and Elsom Cellars. Next week, we are going to have Charlie Hoppus, an icon in the Red Mountain AVA of Washington, right, as we
little
kick off.
Teeny AVA.
It's like super teeny, but it's packing a punch up there over there in Red Mountain. And he's going to be on. We're going to be talking about Fidelitas, kicking off Washington Wine Month, the second one this year. When's California going to get a wine month? Jeff,
every month's a wine month.
It's like these national white wine days and national red wine days. It's like, well, isn't that every day?
Yeah, right. It's just depends what household.
Right. Yeah. Jeff, I just want to thank you for your time.
Yep. Thank you so much.
We did go a little long. I tried to rush through. I still have lots of questions.
I told you 15 minutes knowing you were going to go for 2 hours. So it's fine.
We average it out and we're perfect spot on. Thank you very much.
Well, don't forget, I was going to say, don't forget to make sure you let everyone know that you go to 7cellars.com and you can put in a discount code. It's wine time for a 20% discount for your followers out there.
Not only that,
Free shipping.
It's wine time. And it means more when Jeff says it than when I say it. I was remembering, I forgot to say that. Thank you for that. Go to 7cellars.com in checkout. Coupon code.
Number 7. You don't have to spell 7 out.
Nope. And I like that, actually. 7cellars with a little bit of knowledge. And we gave you lots. Wine becomes a lot less overwhelming. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Jeff. Get yourself some 7cellars or some Elway's Reserve and have an awesome weekend. We'll see you next week with Fidelitas and Wine Time Fridays.
Thank you, Phil and Shelley.
Quality grapes, good times, and great wine are meant to be shared. Since 2006, Elsom Cellars has been producing 100% local Washington wine from Washington's top vineyards. Our wines offer distinctive flavors born of a singular desire to create the quintessential gesture of hospitality. Owner Jody Elsom is a pioneer in the Seattle urban wine movement, and as a family-owned winery, Jody's kids have made a big impact on how we do things here. They not only have wines named after them, they also help name our wine club, which we now refer to as Corks on the Loose. For more information on Elsom Cellars, please visit elsomcellars.com or simply call 425-298-3082.
Located in downtown Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Coeur d'Alene Fresh Wine Bar is a place to meet friends, relax, and just be Coeur d'Alene. Whether you're enjoying wines by the bottle, wines by the glass, or craft beer from our fresh craft beer bar, the pulse of Coeur d'Alene runs right through Coeur d'Alene Fresh. And Club Fresh Wine Club has its perks with its exclusive speakeasy in the back. It's your personal tasting room. Club Fresh Wine Club is one of the most exciting and flexible wine clubs in the Pacific Northwest. Visit freshwinebar.com for more information. Thank you for spending part of your day to wind down with Shelly and Phil. Remember, you can listen to any episode of the Wine Time Fridays podcast by visiting winetimefridays.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And join us on our Wine Time Fridays Facebook page, Instagram, YouTube channel, or on Twitter, which is @VintageTweets, for daily conversation. Until next week, here's our toast to you. To health, wealth, abundance, gratitude, peace on earth, and of course, romance.
Wine Time Fridays.
Thank you, Phil and Shelley.
Boom!